Fáilte, my name is Andrew Healy, and I'm a lover and drinker of Irish whiskey. I'm on a journey of discovery to learn as much as I can about the great spirit of the Emerald Isle. Along that journey, I'm lucky enough to meet other people who are passionate about Irish whiskey, and the My Favourite Irish podcast is their story and their favourite Irish whiskey. Whether that's their current favourite, their first ever dram, or one that has a special place in their life. On this episode of My Favourite Irish, I got to spend some time recently with Gillian Fitzgerald, co-owner of the famed Casements Bar in the Mission District of San Francisco. I first met Gillian back in the spring of 2023 when I visited Casements ahead of an event to fill my belly with some of their delicious fish and chips. And ahead of another event in San Francisco, we sat down in the outdoor snug at Casements with a dram in hand and we had a grand old chinwag. We talked about Gillian's journey to Casements, growing up in County Meath, her first dram, the Irish whiskey renaissance, San Francisco, her trials and tribulations with the Great Recession, and more recently, the COVID pandemic. We chatted about their focus on Irish hospitality at Casements, and how she spent a number of weeks this past summer with her team, travelling Ireland, doing pop-up collabs with other great cocktail bars. And of course, no chat about Casements would be complete without the story of Roger Casement himself and all of his great achievements. And we did all of this while sipping on Gillian's current favourite, which is the single malt double barrel from the lads at Two Stacks. Listen along. Fáilte Arash, you are very welcome back, and we're actually at a bar today. I am in San Francisco at Casements Bar. In the company of Gillian Fitzgerald. Gillian.
Hello.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Thanks for coming in.
It's great to be here. And before we get into all of the chat, we're going to raise a glass.
Yes.
I think that's the
definitely.
First thing to do. And your favourite Irish.
We've been staring at this for
yes,
a bit.
We have. So your favourite Irish. You want to tell us about your favourite Irish?
Well, this just came in today. And so I thought that this might be... I couldn't choose between any of my children. I think my favourite Irish is the thing that I'm drinking at the moment, as long as it's made well. And this is Two Stacks new blend. So this is a single malt, a double barrel single malt that basically just came into the bar about an hour ago. So I haven't even tasted it yet, but I'm excited. It smells delicious.
So let's raise a glass.
Slaunch it
to you. Yeah, let's have a sip of this.
43%. So 10% peated malt, 50% triple malt, and 40% double malt.
Fantastic.
Bourbon, Oloroso, and bourbon again.
Fantastic.
And delicious.
It is
lovely.
Delicious. We've been sitting here in our preamble chatting for the last 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And I've been smelling
it. Shouldn't be like us.
So thank you for sharing this with
Absolutely.
Me. Obviously, this is your current favourite.
It's my current favourite.
And the joy of this is that you can be your first ever, your current, or your go-to whiskey.
Absolutely.
One of the things we'll talk about probably as we get through this is you gave us the breakdown there of the components in the whiskey and the transparency, an ongoing conversation
yes.
in Irish whiskey. We'll get to that in a bit. But anyway, I first met you back in the spring.
Yeah.
You were very hospitable here when I came down to do an event.
Fish and chippy time.
That's right, yeah. So your background, how did you end up here? Where's home? Where
yeah.
are you from?
I was actually born in Limerick. And my dad was a guard in Ireland, and my mum was from Meath, and so they always had planned to be in Meath, and then they via Limerick I was born and then brought back to Meath when I was 8. So yeah, I grew up there. I went to primary school and secondary school, high school in Meath, which is just north of Dublin. So it's very countryside and idyllic, you know, but we're still kind of 30, 45 minutes from the middle of from the city centre. Both my uncles on my mom and my dad's side had bars growing up.
Okay.
So my uncle had a hotel, the Cantrella Hotel down in Sneem in Kerry. And so when we were going down on holidays, it was never a holiday. It was folding linens during the day and picking up glasses at night time. And I have a serious memory of my sister pouring pints of Guinness, she was standing on two stools because she was so small, but she wanted to pour pints. And she was probably, I'd say if she was 5.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
So yeah.
That gives new meaning to start them young.
Oh, start them young. Yeah. So there was it was the gathering. So it was the weekend in Sneem when people would always come back from all around the world, and so all hands on deck were always needed for that. So yeah, started there and then ended up just working in bars all the way through secondary school. My other uncle had a bar in Navan. It was a very popular place called Banjo Sherlock's. And so worked there and then clubhouses and did all the things during college. And then went to the Dominican Republic and worked in construction there.
Well, and we should let folks know that we're both DIT graduates.
DIT, yeah.
You're Bolton Street.
Bolton Street, yeah.
So that would to me, that was the engineering school.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't an engineer, but I did auctioneering and then property economics.
Okay.
But I ended up over there and had an absolute ball, a whale of a time, and learned lots. And then was going back to Ireland to work with the intention of working for CBRE in commercial real estate, and the arse fell out of the Celtic Tiger.
So this was 2008?
Yeah, I was told, yeah, do not come home under any circumstances. So I'd done two J1s over here, and I'd always enjoyed, I fell in love with San Francisco the moment I went up a stairwell down in Union Square when I was 20 years old. And so I was like, well, I'll go back to America for 3 months and I'll work in a restaurant and I'll drive around and then I'll figure it out and go home and figure out where I fit in. And I just figured it out over here. I just kind of got very lucky and I got sponsored and I got a visa and then started working in the bar industry here and taking it like a little bit more, not serious, but I think really trying to hone in on the hospitality and showcase like what Irish people do best.
Okay.
And yeah, so it was fun.
So we're at folks can't see us obviously, yeah, but we're sitting in the snug.
Gorgeous.
Yeah, we are sitting in the gorgeous snug here at Casements on Mission Street.
Yeah,
on the Mission Street.
Yeah.
So you're obviously now a bar owner.
Yeah, this is actually my second bar. So, but yeah, this is the bar that Sean, who's the fella that, if you do come in here, I'm the one that's normally talking. He's the one that's actually doing work. But Sean and I worked together at a bar called Nicky's, and we'd always talked about during that time when the Celtic Tiger did kind of come a shred, like how we could help back home. And the way that we felt that we could the most was by helping the Irish economy with like new and emerging products. So we'd always had this idea of building an Irish bar that was way more focused on the future rather than paying homage to the past, but focused on the future. So, you know, it took us a very long time to get to it. And we were 3 years, four places in escrow. And then we opened 6 weeks before COVID.
Of course you did.
Yeah.
So obviously, on a number of these podcasts, we've talked about COVID with people. We're out the other side of
yes,
it.
Yes, absolutely.
But how was it opening a new business right before that?
To be totally honest with you, there's you know, blood, sweat, and tears, like so many tears. My hair, the inside of my hair actually went white, like genuinely. It was incredibly stressful, but there was definitely a massive percentage of luck that kept us open. But I do think that actually being such a young business played a positive for us, because we weren't like a place that had been open for 20 years and like, this is the way you do this thing, this is the way you do that thing. We had none of those protocols put together already. So as things changed every week, we were like, well, sure, whatever. Like, that's fine, let's do that then. And then, you know, we extended out here. We have this like beautiful back patio now because of COVID. And we really focused on staying within the rules and making sure that when people came here, they felt really safe, but they could forget about it for 40 minutes or an hour or whatever they were here for. And we got a name kind of during COVID. So we were also doing deliveries. So probably up until, I'd say maybe a year and a half ago, we had more regulars, quote unquote regulars, that had never been here than we had regulars, because they were people that were buying weekly, you know, weekly or bi-weekly. We did deliveries, so people would, you know, canned cocktails, batch cocktails, soda bread, chicken curry in my little Lamborghini aka the Prius. Clocked up some miles anyway.
So in some ways what you're saying there, being a young business And obviously you'd invested a lot into this. Lots of sweat, tears, yeah. and money, I'm guessing, as well. You were going to make it work. You were motivated to make it work.
Yeah, definitely motivated to make it work. And, you know, there's the other thing of, like, over here in the US, like, when funding came through, unfortunately, we'd, you know, obviously we'd opened 6 weeks before that. We'd started bank accounts maybe 6 months or 8 months before that. And we just changed bank account about a month before COVID. So our bank wouldn't help us. And so we didn't have any of that initial funding that everybody else had.
So you didn't have last year's taxes?
No, we had nothing. Yeah. Yeah. So we luckily, one of our investors, she's involved with Simple Bank, and she helped us work with some brokers, and we figured it out. But we got a James Beard grant early on, and we were that wasn't by merit. That was purely by them giving out stuff, and we just happened to click the button at 3 o'clock in the morning. But that saved us. Like, I actually think that was the point where, like, it could have all gone totally south. And luckily we got that. And then, yeah, it was just 7 days a week, 12, 14-hour days for all of us. And, you know, and then gradually bringing all the staff back on until we got to a place where, like, even during, like, COVID, when things were open, we were doing well. Yeah, it was good.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. So...
It was tough. Again.
I can't say to... Yes, we'd all say that. Yeah. So I can't say you're back to normal because you only
have... We don't have normal.
Exactly.
Yeah, so we don't know.
This is your normal.
Yeah, yeah. And it's been... You know, I mean, obviously, like, everybody likes to poo-poo on San Francisco, which drives me crazy because it's an absolutely magical city. It's obviously been going through some stuff because of COVID and some other stuff, but, like... We just, anyone who's like living in the East Bay or anyone who's living in the Bay Area wants a break and come down, like, please come down. Like, it's a phenomenal city, and it still is, and it always will be. It's going through a little blip, but we're coming out the other side of it.
It's a special place.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm not sure if you know, but I lived here back in the 90s.
Yeah, you were talking about that. Yeah.
And I feel this is a very philosophical thing to say. I actually feel my soul was meant to live in this part of the world.
Oh.
Northern California, San Francisco.
Absolutely.
It's a very special place. Yeah. So, and within San Francisco, we're in what I think is actually a pretty special neighborhood. We're in the Mission.
Absolutely. Like, yeah.
Colorful on every level.
On every level, yeah. And it, like, you know, you're living in, you're in the middle of a city here, and it's like, it's a little bit of everybody. And, you know, I mean, you know, historically speaking, like, it did actually start as an Irish neighborhood. And then a lot of the Irish folks ended up kind of moving up to Noe Valley. It's a Latino neighborhood. And then, you know, like, queer culture kind of, like, came here in the, like, sort of 90s. And there was a lot of, like, queer people moved in. And then a lot of tech people moved in the early 2000s. So there's, like, remnants of all of those things. And, like, you know, you only have to look up or down or sideways. And there's, like, you know, historical footage of that. You know, it's, like, it's... It's great. It's like it's a city. Like,
yeah.
You're in the city when you're in the Mission.
Definitely, definitely.
Yeah. And best food too.
Yeah. No, it's great neighborhoods.
Yeah.
Great neighborhood eateries around here. So you talked about where we're sitting out back. You put this on during COVID. It's an event space.
Yeah. So the patio is, you know, totally open to the public. I think a lot of people, because of maybe the way it looks, deem us as sort of an event space, but we are a community bar. Like, we don't like to close to the public. We don't like to do event. You know, we do events kind of slightly begrudgingly, to be totally honest with you, because I don't ever want someone to, I don't want one of my regulars on a Friday to feel like he can't come in for a pint of Guinness or someone can't come in for a cocktail. But
people could rent the space where we're sitting at the
back
here.
Yeah, the Snug. Yeah. It's, yeah, you can, you don't even have to rent it. You just let us know and we'll look after you.
Okay.
Yeah. So it seats about 12 people. My friend Paul Coffey built it with in conjunction with Teelings. And so they wanted to build us a Snug inside. And I said, sure, why would we be putting a Snug inside for? It's the middle of COVID. We'll put it outside. So we have an outdoor Snug. But it definitely, you know, and it's, you know, it definitely feels like home in here. It's really nice.
Yeah, no, it is. And I'll obviously take pictures and share them on
amazing,
the website.
Yeah.
But we are here under the Teelings Phoenix here in the Snug. So
definitely.
Fantastic. So what brought me here back in May when I came here to do an event was your whiskey list.
Uh-huh.
And
it's
you,
fun.
Yeah, it's really fun and probably dangerous for the credit card as well. But
yeah.
So I can see there's a massive smile on Gillian's face now as we turn to whiskey. You obviously, like we've talked a number of times, we're both incredibly proud of what's happening back on
Absolutely.
The island.
Absolutely.
How much fun is it to put together your whiskey list to keep evolving it?
Yeah, it's really fun, and I think that there's like obviously people that, you know, may or may not be familiar with like the American market and like how distributors work here. You know, there tends to be like there's kind of a formula that you can do where you can kind of just use four distribution companies and you can get your beer and your wine and all your alcohol from them, and then they're the huge guys. But the interesting parts are the little guys. And so obviously like the big guys have some of the major things that we have, lots of bottles on the back bar. But yeah, like researching and finding out, like, you know, we don't have every single bottle of Irish whiskey that exists. Some of the companies that exist in Ireland are not things that I want to support. And so I do a lot of due diligence on what we do have behind the bar. He who shall not be named will never have a bottle of whiskey behind the bar here.
Yeah.
He can come here and fight me on it. But
you'd probably beat him as well in the fight.
Well, I think you can. We'll see.
Well, I admit you on that one.
But like, I think that there's, and I think with intention, like anything that you do, like anyone who owns bars or who works in bar, has worked in a bar in their life, the details are for the 2% of people to notice. You only do the details for. Everybody else won't notice it, and it doesn't matter. And no matter how much effort you put into it, and you're like, look at this. No, they won't see it. It's for the 2% or 5% of people that will notice. And those people, I get a big kick out of when they geek out over it, you know. And it's for them. We do it for them.
And so, on that, are you? And there may not be an answer to this question. Are you an Irish bar destination? Are you a whiskey bar / Irish whiskey bar destination for your customers?
I think what we want to be is, I grew up at the Hill of Tara, and like I went to primary school in Kilmessan, and if people know what Kilmessan is, when I was growing up had a population of about 200 or 300, I think, and it's ballooned a bit now, but there's, you know, there's a couple of bars there, but like, if you're gay, you're straight, you're a man, you're a woman, you drink whiskey, you drink Bulmers, you drink Diet Coke, you all sit in the same place. If you go to a wedding, you go there after the wedding. If you go to a funeral, you go there after the funeral. And that's what an Irish bar is. So we're a little bit of everything for everybody. And, you know, we have a sign, like, when you walk out to the patio, be good or be gone. And I actually ripped it from McSorley's in New York. But I think it speaks to who we are. It's like, this is a space for everybody, just don't be a dick.
Okay.
And so we focus in on like new and emerging Irish, so that comes in every form of like bands that are touring, poets that come into town, and sometimes we do readings here. It comes in the form of like the back bar, the way it looks. But it's, you know, it's supposed to promote Ireland today.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And so that it's a hard question, because some days here it feels like a gay bar. Some days here it feels like all the lads drinking Coronas. Some days it feels like everyone's has a dram in their hand. Like it.
Okay. In many ways, that's good. It's
great.
Highlights the diversity.
Yeah, and everybody, well, I might be biased, but like people that tell me anyway, have a great time when they're here, and it's like they get to. There's a mingling that's happening here that I don't see happening as much post-COVID in other spaces, because it's so informal. And we want to keep it that way. We don't want to be stuffy and pretentious about it. And the bartenders are all well-versed and knowledgeable, but they are in no way, shape or form pretentious. And I think that, you know, you have to be a bit vulnerable when you're reading cocktail lists or you're reading whiskey lists too, to feel okay to ask somebody a question about what does sort, you know, what does like anything mean on
it. Well, and on the subject of a whiskey list, you have one that is as long as 2 hours.
I think 170 Irish whiskies. Or 100. I have loads upstairs that I haven't remembered. Sean will kill me for saying that. But yes, I think we're hitting about 160.
Good for you.
Yeah, 160.
Yeah, and obviously again, I'll share pictures of that. It's an A to Z of
absolutely.
A wonderful journey around the island.
Yeah.
Where you've got some real, real treats.
Yeah, and real fun stuff in the works we have. Like, obviously, because we've created like several really killer relationships with a lot of like distillers at home, and like gotten to taste some up and coming stuff that we're just like so excited to get on the shelves and for people to get in their glasses, you know.
So on that. You talk about relationships. you were back in Ireland for an awful long time recently.
Well, what happened was my sister was getting married.
Okay, so you had an excuse to go back.
And so I was going to go back for a week. And I just started thinking about it. And I was like, well, that time of year is a little bit slower. It's gloomy. For those who haven't been in San Francisco, July is probably the coldest month of the year. So it kind of slows down a little bit here. So the majority of our staff are not from Ireland, but we push the Irish hospitality. And we thought that it might be a great opportunity to bring them home and have them experience it themselves. And boy, did we. It was amazing. Yeah, we started at Slane, at a small music festival that's Slane, on the grounds of Slane Castle, called Other Side. And we did the bar backstage for the artists and created a bunch of cocktails for it. It was really fun. And then we popped up in 3 different bars across Ireland. And with that, the staff were able to ferry over and back from here.
And please share who the bars were, because it's an A-list.
Yeah, we started with Jackal in Navan, which is a brand new bar, because I'm from near Navan. So Jackal is the folks from Bonobo in Galway. And they're fantastic, amazing people. And it was a really great experience to bring what we do here back home, so like my school friends and my aunts and uncles could come and have a cocktail. And then we went to Bar 1661, and we did some amazing, like the night before, we did some amazing rum tastings with a bunch of, it's just fascinating, like the world that's coming to it, you know.
I think it's lovely that you're able to pay homage to where you're from by bringing what you have here to there.
Yeah, it sounds a bit like meta, but it's it works though.
It's almost like a cross pollination or
something. Yeah, I snuck in a bit of mezcal too when I was there. And our biggest selling cocktail here is actually a mezcal cocktail, and I made it at Bar 1661, and people loved it. So
they like their agave spirits at 1661.
They do, but a lot of folks that were there were not like 1661 patrons. They were. Okay. There for you know, they wouldn't have thought they were going to order agave, so that was that might be what I'm talking about, like kind of going, leaving to go back to Tara via Holyhead kind of thing. And then we finished in the epic Dingle at Dick Max,
of course. Yeah, it's like a pilgrimage there to get to that place.
Oh yeah, it was well worth it. Anyone who hasn't been there, if it's raining, if it's sunny, it doesn't matter, go. Yeah.
Good. And you and I talked before we jumped on. I spent some time back in Ireland back in May
serious trip.
And it was a wonderful trip for me. So it's lovely to hear that you've taken what you've got here and you've worked it into a month back. Were you happy to get back to San Francisco for a break?
Yes, I was. I missed everybody here, and I missed the bar, and I wanted to check in. Yeah, of course. Yeah. It was very hard to be away that long, and it was a lot of work. It was really a lot of work, but it was very worth it. It was a once in a lifetime. Well, hopefully not, but it was a
great experience for your team to
I mean, you know, like you just met Nick when you walked in, but my favorite thing that some of them said was like, I get it now. And that's all I needed to hear.
Yeah.
I get it now is You get the hospitality, you get it, you know.
Yeah. No, it's interesting to hear that. Yeah. So, on a personal note, your first Irish whiskey, do you remember the first Irish whiskey you drank?
I'd say it was definitely Jameson, or Jemison. But I have a very funny... the first time I ever drank whiskey with my dad, we were in Wexford at a hotel. We were staying the night there. And we'd had dinner, and my sisters, it was just my two sisters and I and my mom and my dad. And my mom and my two sisters went to bed, and my dad said, we'll have a nightcap. And I think maybe that was the first time I'd ever kind of had like a late night drink with my dad at a hotel. You know what I mean? Like that kind of like
a
fire. Yeah, the fire was on and stuff. And I, at that time, was very into Paddy.
Okay.
And I think it was kind of, there was a lot of like blue collar guys that I used to hang out with, and they drink like High Lifes and Paddy and here in America. So I ordered a Paddy, and my dad said, no daughter of mine. And I thought he was about to kill me for ordering whiskey, because he'd never seen me drink whiskey. He said, no daughter of mine is drinking Paddy, she'll have a powers. Never forget that.
So taking that one step further, you would have been raised in a Powers house then. Your dad obviously drank Powers.
My dad's not a big whiskey drinker, and my mom's not a big whiskey drinker either. I think my dad would have been gifted a lot of whiskey.
Yeah.
And there'd be bottles and bottles. I'd say he has expensive bottles. He doesn't even know it, but there'd be no. They weren't whiskey drinkers. Yeah, pints.
It was the same for me.
Yeah.
And but I was. There was always a bottle of Paddy in our house.
Oh, there was always a bottle of Paddy.
Which
in our
was
house.
Funny because
Absolutely.
It was raised in Dublin.
Yeah.
And that was a Cork whiskey.
Big time, yeah.
So Powers wasn't a thing in our house, which is, every house was different.
Yeah. Well, I think with Powers too, it's more like, or I think, probably. The association with horse racing is probably where the Powers thing comes from in our house. I think because grew up in horse country,
yeah,
so
yeah, for sure.
Gold Cup and all that, yeah.
So we've talked about the space here. You've talked about cocktails and what you did back in Ireland.
Yeah.
You have a great cocktail list here, and I know you enjoy and your team enjoy creating them. What's your fave?
What's my fave on the menu right now?
Yeah.
I wouldn't normally be. We've a lovely vodka cocktail actually called the Voyage of Bran. So we tried to kind of give all the names, the cocktails, a few little Irish nods. But we make it's got a carrot eau de vie and then a little vodka and then a cilantro and parsley cordial that we make.
Fantastic.
And so it's kind of like, it's basically like a martini, but it's like a salad martini. It's a garden martini.
So you're getting one or two servings of your daily.
Your
fruit.
Dailies, yeah. Exactly.
Lots of greens.
That, and then we have no bananas, so we did a cocktail with Powers rye, and then we make an allspice dram here with a creme de banane, and so it's a banana Manhattan with Powers rye, because the rye is lovely. It's not as spicy as an American rye.
Yeah.
So I think it works better in cocktails that maybe aren't as as classic as, like, instead of a riff on, even though I suppose it is a riff, but I think that one is pretty solid as well.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the Powers rye.
Absolutely, me too. Love it.
Yeah, I like it. I know you. We may not get this online, but I know you're doing an event with them here next week. And on that, kind of talking about your relationships with brands and distributors and doing whiskey events here, is that something you do?
Yeah, definitely. And like, we don't work for any of them, so we pick and choose who we work for, and it's definitely a relationship to relationship basis, and also like something that I want to be proud of. So we're not gonna work with everybody, but it's it's been great. We just had Laura Healy over from Roe & Co last week. She actually DJ'd here. So Laura's the master distiller for Roe & Co, and I got a couple of tastes of some really epically delicious things she's about to put out, single malts and stuff. We had an event where we had like four of the best bartenders in the city came and made some really fun Roe & Co cocktails. We do a lot of stuff with Slane, we do a lot of stuff with Teelings, we do a lot of stuff with Powers.
Yeah.
The red breasts, you know, like
So you probably hold a first in Irish whiskey that you got a master distiller
to DJ.
I
think so.
At your bar.
I think so. Yeah, and she was brilliant too. She's if we can get her on the list here, we'll pay. She's brilliant. Yeah.
Fantastic. And I know you also do a Whiskey Wednesday here.
We do. Currently, it's Clonakilty, which we love, and then the Minky Chin as well. We threw it in there. But yeah, we rotate it out every month, and we just kind of, it's just to shine a spotlight. So we take $4 off the cost of each dram. So like the Clonakilty double barrel is like $8. So, you know, you're not going to say no to that.
Of course. Yeah. No, it's a great drop.
Yeah. And Wednesday is a great day to drink whiskey, in my opinion.
I don't think there's a bad day to drink whiskey, but
Wednesday's extra special though.
Middle of the week. That
yeah,
hump
you
day
gotta
thing.
Get the hump and the yeah, and then Thursday, sure. Thursday's the new Friday, and sure Friday is Friday. So basically, you just have to get through Monday and Tuesday and half a Wednesday, and you're laughing.
And then yeah. So because you're not busy enough with this place, you also have one business.
We just opened a second one, yeah.
One business, but two retail outlets.
Yeah.
And it's not exactly close to here either.
No, not at all. It's in Palm Springs Bottle Shop. And so we have a beer and wine and kind of snacks and provisions store. And then we have a tasting room off the side of it. That we focus in on the wine, and then we just opened a liquor store, so we'll be building out the whiskey there, and I think the goal is to build out a really epic website, and we'll be really pushing Irish whiskey on there.
And so do e-commerce on it, that'd be the plan to sell it?
Absolutely, yeah. Okay. And I think currently at the moment 90% of the products that we carry are products made by LGBTQ folks, women, people of color, or like companies that are doing things in a socially responsible way, and they have the receipts to show they walk the walk and talk the talk, basically.
Okay. And obviously, for some folks who don't know their geography of California,
oh geez, yeah,
Palm Springs is not exactly close to here.
It's 9 hours on the most boring, smelly road if you put the foot down. And it's an hour flight. It's fine, but it's a whole different world.
My folks still struggle when I tell them that. So we go up to Central Oregon quite a bit.
Oh yeah.
And it's an 8.5 hour drive.
Oh yeah.
And they can't fathom 8.5 hours in a straight line.
Well, the thing is, what I've learned about when I go home to when I'm driving in Ireland is that like 3 hours driving in Ireland is I feel the same tiredness as I do with 6 or 7 hours driving here. It's a very different beast altogether.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Obviously, some of the roads have gotten better over the years.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. No, the roads are brilliant. It's not that. I think it's more, there's more, the curvature of the land, we'll just call it.
Okay.
A little bit.
You leave it at that.
Yeah.
So how often are you down in Palm Springs?
Down about once a month.
Okay.
Yeah. So Pride is on the beginning of November, and Palm Springs would be quite a big LGBTQ town. So we'll be busy for that. And then the first weekend in December, we're doing a wine fair where we'll have 45 different vendors. So you just buy a ticket and then you just drink away.
You don't have enough to do up here.
I know.
You're doing that.
Well, our business partners in Palm Springs are epic. They're incredible. Yeah, they're amazing men. So it's a team effort, but they do all the heavy lifting for sure.
Okay, fantastic, fantastic. We're going to wrap it up now, but just, I suppose, for those who don't know their history, obviously this is Casements, named after Roger Casements.
Yeah.
Okay, so could you give people a two-minute history on Roger?
Roger Casement to me is the most interesting man you've never heard of, possibly, or you have heard of him, and you know, myself and Sean, my business partner here, are both like big history nerds, and you know, would pride ourselves in like reading a lot of Irish history, and you know, being in school, never being taught about him. He was totally written out of every history book, and so his story basically, grew up in Ireland, a Protestant of sort of Anglo-Irish sort of lineage. His father was in the Royal Marines, and he did not want to join the Royal Marines, but it was around the time when people were quote-unquote exploring Africa, and so he joined the Merchant Marines, and he ended up in the Congo. And when he did, he met all sorts of interesting characters there, and he's actually in the Heart of Darkness in Joseph Conrad's book. He's basically, he told Joseph Conrad the story, and Joseph Conrad wrote it down, which is Apocalypse Now, the movie. And he went into the jungle in the Congo and saw the atrocities that were happening to the people there under King Leopold's reign, and he would not stop until he was heard. So they call him the first humanitarian. He went back to Britain and had all these reports and was able to like actually speak to native people, instead of like, he was one of the first people to ever do it, which is to now seems wild. And so he did that, and then he ended up going to Brazil and Peru, and it was all about the rubber trade at the time. So that's what was going on. Where these like humanitarian atrocities were happening, and he just wouldn't shut up about them, and he really doubled down on it. All the while he was taking the king's paycheck, he was sending it all to the IRA, and he realized very early on that colonialization didn't work.
Yeah.
And he really was a massive part in the 1916 rebellion, but he was written out of it. And he actually was in Germany when the gun run happened, and he took a U-boat to Ireland, jumped off it in Kerry, got caught, and then he was tried for treason in Britain because he was Sir Roger Casement, even though he never knelt and got the sword. He's the only person to ever do it, ever.
And I think most of us would
only know about that very last part of his life, the gun running, I suppose.
Oh, he was an incredible humanitarian. When you read things that people, and he was a poet, and when you read things that like men wrote about him, they're wooed by him. He was so charismatic and good looking and sort of well spoken and well versed. He could woo anybody. So I think he used his Irishness in the best way possible. Absolutely. But unfortunately he came to an end, and he's now, the Irish government got his remains back in the 70s. So he's actually buried in Glasnevin. He's actually the first grave when you go through the front entrance. His grave is the first one beside Parnell's.
And of course the hope now would be that the GAA ground that's named after him in Belfast, isn't that right?
They got the bid. They got the bid, yeah.
So the hope now is that it'll actually be redeveloped in...
Oh, I think so, yeah. Yeah.
So it's been stuck in, goodness knows, lots of planning and various issues.
Oh, yeah.
So
a movie needs to be made about him. My old roommate and I met Michael Fassbender in San Francisco one night, and a slightly drunken conversation, we're like, you should be Roger Casement. So if he ends up being Roger Casement, you can thank me. Yeah, but his life should be a movie. It's incredible it hasn't been made yet.
And it's interesting as we move further from those events, they become explored more. I think I'm still learning things that happened during the Second World War that I never knew existed.
Yeah.
Making movies about them.
Yeah.
There's parts of our history which you've just outlined.
Absolutely.
That I'm guilty of not knowing all the details.
Oh sure, yeah. I mean, and there's crazy things if you go to, so you go to the cemetery in Glasnevin, and his grave is there, and then you go over to the gardens next door, and there's 80-100 pieces he brought back from all over the world that are archived, that are that botanists studied in Ireland, that helped people understand more about he just, imagine the Dos Equis man, but a real dude
with an Irish accent,
a charmer. Yeah so an incredible man. So we didn't think there was enough things named after him.
Okay,
so
well done for you for as you said earlier on, a kind of a nod to history.
Yeah.
But everything you're doing here at the bar is in a very modern way.
Yeah, I think we just, there's, I was saying to you earlier, there's no, I love an old man's bar with a pint. There's nothing wrong with that, absolutely nothing. But we just wanted to do our own thing, and we didn't want to be pigeonholed in because we were both Irish.
Yeah, no, makes sense.
You know.
Makes sense. Okay, well...
Sláinte.
Yeah, Sláinte, again, thank you for your time. It's been lovely chatting. And I would obviously encourage folks to come and see you here in the Mission District in San Francisco. And I'm going to turn this off, and I'm going to finish this absolutely.
we've made a dint in the bottle, but not a big enough dint, if you ask me.
Yeah, well, I've got to go and work after this, and so do you.
So do I know.
Yeah, but a lovely two stacks single malt double barrel that you just opened, especially for me. It's your new favourite. So, Gillian at Casements in San Francisco, thanks again.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for taking the time to listen to this episode. You'll find more episodes wherever you get your podcasts, and you'll find the My Favourite Irish video series at irishwhiskeylad.com. That's Irish Whiskey with an E, LAD.com. If you've enjoyed this episode, I'd appreciate it if you could take a couple of minutes to leave a review or a rating at your favourite podcast platform. Until next time, Sláinte.